Thank you for listening to this week's sermon podcast by Dr. John Hanna. It is our hope and prayer that you will be encouraged in your faith and in your walk with Jesus. For more information, please go to springfieldchurch.org. Here now is the most recent message.
Turn to Mark chapter 10 in your New Testaments. Mark chapter 10, or pull it up on your app, beginning at verse 32. We are called to run this race of faith set before us with endurance and perseverance. Every day, we are to set our eyes on the prize. And God has something for us as we run this race of faith. But there are obstacles along the way. There are challenges. There are issues that we must deal with. There are conundrums. And there are paradoxes that need to be resolved. But God is with us to help us. He's given us the word of the Lord in our hands to guide us and lead us. We have the indwelling presence of the Holy Spirit to help us along the way. But we can't sweep issues of life under the rug, and especially issues of faith, if we're going to faithfully run the race set before us. And this passage here deals with some significant issues that all of us must address as we seek to faithfully run the race of faith set before us. Mark chapter 10, beginning at verse 32. They were on their way up to Jerusalem with Jesus leading the way, and the disciples were astonished, while those who followed were afraid. Again, he took the 12 aside and told them what was going to happen to him. "We are going up to Jerusalem," he said, "and the Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and teachers of the law. They will condemn him to death and will hand him over to the Gentiles, who will mock him and spit on him, flog him and kill him. 3 days later, he will rise." Then James and John, the sons of Zebedee, came to him. "Teacher," they said, "we want you to do for us whatever we ask." "What do you want me to do for you?" he asked. They replied, "Let one of us sit at your right and the other at your left in your glory." "You do not know what you are asking," Jesus said. "Can you drink the cup I drink or be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with?" "We can," they answered. Jesus said to them, "You will drink the cup I drink and be baptized with the baptism I am baptized with. But to sit at my right or left is not for me to grant. Those places belong to those for whom they have been prepared." When the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be slave of all. For the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many." Lord, as we read these words, however many times we read them, whether this is the very first time we are exposed to this passage or whether we've read this 100 times, it seems to me like we just still have trouble grasping the significance of what Jesus is saying here. I must have read this passage many times over my lifetime, and I'm still struck with the intensity of what Jesus teaches, and there's still something here for me to grasp, and I still don't grasp it. That's why I need your help to help me truly begin to understand what Jesus is saying here. Because it seems to me that this is the very heart of why you sent your Son Jesus into the world, and how we are to respond and imitate and make it a part of who we are. Lord, in my meager attempt to try to preach this passage, would you help us try to grasp the significance of what Jesus is teaching here. In your name I pray. Amen. If you like theology, as I do, and many of you do, you tend to like to wrestle with theological conundrums. For example, could God make a rock so big that even He can't pick it up? Here's another one. If God is love, why did He create mosquitoes? I don't get it. Now, Dr. Tracy, our resident professor of biology and expert on the ecosystem, may have a good response for us. I don't know. But I know the other night when Renee and I were sitting in the backyard trying to enjoy dinner, I was spending my time swatting these mosquitoes. And many of them got to me. It still ruined my dinner. Here's another theological conundrum, perhaps one that you haven't considered before, but one that boggles my mind. Could God create such a spicy burrito that is even too hot for Him to eat? It's something to consider, these theological conundrums. There are several conundrums here in this passage that I just read to you that we must wrestle with and take into account. And the first of which are verses 33 and 34. And then the abysmal response or lack of response as we look into verse 35. Look at verses 33 and 34 with me. Jesus is sharing the very heart and soul and essence of why He came to this planet. Mark chapter 10, verses 33 and 34. The Son of Man will be betrayed to the chief priests and teachers of the law. They will condemn Him to death, will hand Him over to the Gentiles, who will mock Him and spit on Him, flog Him and kill Him. 3 days later, He will rise. And what do we get from the disciples? Crickets. No response. And even worse than that, we get in verse 35, "Teacher, we want you to do for us whatever we ask." As if what Jesus had just said wasn't enough, right? What a huge conundrum we are left with in verses 33, 34, and then this abysmal break until we get to verse 35. This has got to be perhaps one of the most heartbreaking breaks in all of biblical literature. If you can find another one, let me know. Jesus had just described His pending future. And it's as if everything He just said went over the disciples' head. It went in one ear and out the other. Selective hearing. Call it what you will. But immediately in verse 35, we get, "Jesus, we want you to do stuff for us." I don't know about you, but I identify with that way more than I want to admit. I think we all do. I think what we just see here between verses 34 and 35 is one of the biggest problems facing Christianity. Ever since the very beginning on up to this day, Jesus lays out for us His purpose, and we end up saying, "Jesus, we want you to do this for me." In the Gospels, and scattered a few places throughout the rest of the New Testament, depending on which translation of the Bible you read, Jesus speaks about 32,000 words. Certainly it's under 40,000 words. And if we are going to truly follow Jesus, if we're going to claim to be a disciple of Jesus, if we're going to take Jesus to heart and truly, authentically, genuinely, and wholeheartedly follow Him, we must hold every single one of those 32,000 words of Jesus in the palm of our hands and take them to heart. We cannot be selective. We cannot pick and choose. We cannot piecemeal what words and sayings and edicts of Jesus we want to apply and what we want to dismiss. We just can't do that. We can no longer pick and choose. If we're going to follow Jesus, every single one of his words must carry significant weight. So when Jesus says, be merciful, I can't pick and choose who I'm going to be merciful with. When Jesus says, blessed are the peacemakers, I have to live as a peacemaker, not just choose who I'm going to live in peace with. When Jesus says, forgive even your enemies, I absolutely must take his words to heart. Every single one of Jesus' 32,000 words or so must carry significant weight. We can no longer piecemeal or pick and choose. Jesus says here, I have come to offer my life to you. And the very least we can do is respond to that. Instead, what do we see the disciples doing? But Jesus, I want you to do for me. There was a very sad story that happened just this last week. It happened on Wednesday. 77-year-old Manuel Pinzon. I read this article. This happened just a few days ago. Beautiful grandfather, 77 years old. This happened in Georgia. The article actually was entitled, and this was from ABC News, Grandfather Sacrifices His Life for His Twin Granddaughters. Apparently he lives on some acreage, and as he was preparing lunch for the girls, they were outside, and they saw a baby deer. And they excitedly ran back and they said, Papa, we want to show you this baby deer. And he said to them, well, let's eat lunch first and then we'll go out and see the baby deer. He served his granddaughter's lunch. They went out back. And as the story reported, as they were standing out in the backyard, there was a loud crack and a tall branch broke. And the grandfather, being as astute as he was, pushed the girls out of the way, and the branch fell and crushed him. And he died. This happened just a few days ago. Now, if you were telling me that story and explaining everything to me as I just explained to you, and my response was, I bet I could beat you at a game of basketball. You would look at me weird and say, where is your compassion? Where is your empathy? Did you just not hear what I told you and what happened to this beautiful family? And that's something of what we have going on here in this passage. Jesus had just clearly laid out what is going to happen to him. And his disciples respond with, we want you to do things for us. That's kind of the second conundrum. Don't get me wrong, Jesus wants to do things for us. He absolutely does. He wants to help us. He says in verse 36, what do you want me to do for you? In the passage that we're going to look at next Sunday, Jesus says to a blind man, what do you want me to do for you? So don't get me wrong, Jesus is here to help us and he wants to do things for us. But neither is he a cosmic vending machine. You see, the way to run this race of faith is not to continually ask Jesus, this is what I want you to do for me. But it is instead to ask, what can I offer to you, Jesus? Because often when we ask, Jesus, this is what I want you to do for me, we really don't know what we want. Even when we're asking for what we want, right? For even Jesus says here, you guys don't know what you're asking for. I have a friend who years ago was working at a company and a position came up as a manager. And he really wanted this position. And he called me up and said, John, pray that I get this position. And I said, okay. And he prayed and he prayed and I prayed and he really wanted this position. It would have meant higher pay, bonuses, all the works. Well, lo and behold, he got the position. He got what he asked for. He got what he wanted. He got what he prayed for. A few months into the position, he was regretting it. The stress, the hardship, the infighting with coworkers. And it was beginning to take a toll on him and his family and his health. He thought he knew what he wanted and he prayed for it, but it really wasn't the will of God for him. We can ask and ask and ask, and we can pray and we can pray and we can pray, but do we really know what it is we are asking and praying for? Do we really know? You see, this race of faith that we're in is not as cut and dry as we like to think it is. We have to be listening, truly listening to the voice of Jesus. What it is he's telling us, what it is he's saying to us, how it is he's guiding us, how it is he's teaching us to pray. But we must absolutely be attentive. Because frankly, we don't know what it is we want, do we? The other conundrum that I see in this passage, verse 41 of Mark chapter 10, is that in what was supposed to be a united group between Jesus and the 12, really became a fractured group. Verse 41, when the 10 heard about this, they became indignant with James and John. This isn't the first time this happened. If you go to Mark chapter 9, just a chapter earlier, Mark 9, 33 and 34, we read this. When they came to Capernaum, and Jesus was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the road?" But they kept quiet because on the way they had argued about who was the greatest. I think I'm going to publish a Bible where I insert pictures of Jesus either rolling his eyes or he has his hands on his head like this going, "Oh, brother." The eye roll edition. They were supposed to be a united group, working in harmony. Jesus, they called him rabbi, teacher, but were they really listening? And again, in Mark chapter 9, he says, if anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. Reminds me of a book that I'm going to be reading this summer. Came out 20 years ago by a noted historian Doris Kearns Goodwin. Maybe you're familiar with it. Team of Rivals. It's a New York Times bestseller. If you're into American history, it's a great book. She talks about Lincoln and his political genius, as the name implies. It's a little bit of a paradox. How can you have a team of rivals? Well, Lincoln, in trying to unite this country, had to deal with political factions all over the place. And part of his genius was his humility to be able to unite all these factions for the greater good of saving the country. It's a big read. It's 750 pages, but I want to read the final paragraphs of this book. Because as I read these paragraphs, I can't help but to think that maybe Abraham Lincoln picked up a thing or two from Jesus and how he dealt with his faction of disciples. Listen to this. It's very inspiring. "Every man is said to have his peculiar ambition," the 23-year-old Abraham Lincoln had written in his open letter to the people of Sangamon County during his first bid for public office in the Illinois State Legislature. "Whether it be true or not, I can say that, for one, that I have no other ambition so great as that of being truly esteemed of my fellow men by rendering myself worthy of their esteem. How far I shall succeed in gratifying this ambition is yet to be developed. The ambition to establish a reputation worthy of the esteem of his fellows so that his story could be told after his death has carried Lincoln through his bleak childhood, his laborious efforts to educate himself, his stirring of political failures, and a depression so profound that he declared himself more than willing to die, except that, quote, he had done nothing to make any human being remember that he had lived. An indomitable sense of purpose had sustained him through the disintegration of the Union and through the darkest months of the war, when he was called upon again and again to rally his disheartened countrymen, soothe the animosity of his generals, and mediate among members of his often contentious administration. His conviction that we are one nation, indivisible, conceived in liberty, and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal, led to the rebirth of a union free of slavery. And he expressed this conviction in a language of enduring clarity and beauty, exhibiting a literary genius to match his political genius. With his death, Abraham Lincoln had come to seem the embodiment of his own words, with malice toward none, with charity for all, voiced in his second inaugural to lay out the visionary pathway to a reconstructed Union. The deathless name he sought from the start had grown far beyond Sangamon County and Illinois, reached across the truly United States, until his legacy, had surmised at the moment of his death, belonged not only to America, but to the ages, to be revered and sung throughout time. There's something about relinquishing ambition. Not that ambition is bad in and of itself, but in order to make any movement sustainable, in order to make any movement work, in order to make any relationship work, by the way, there has to be a laying aside of ambition, ego, self, pride, for that which is greater. And Jesus dealt with that with his 12. Lincoln so beautifully did that with his team of rivals. And the Church of Jesus Christ must, if we're going to run this race of faith faithfully and with endurance, with an eye towards the prize, there is no room for ego, self, pride, and personal ambition. Mark chapter 10, verses 43 and 45. Perhaps the greatest paradox or conundrum we see. One that we don't seem to really get all the time. And yet it's one that Jesus taught, and it's one that Jesus demonstrated. Verses 43 and 45. Whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be the slave of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. On paper, this seems absurd. On paper, this does not make any sense. How can I be great by being a servant? And it's a paradox. It's a conundrum. And unfortunately, it's one that the church is still struggling with. And yet, this is the way to greatness. Jesus laid down his life, and it was only then that God raised him from the dead and elevated him to the position that he did. We read that in Philippians chapter 2. If you haven't already, pick up your new daily bread. Not only is today the first Sunday of the month, it's the first day of the month, and so we have a brand new Our Daily Bread devotional. If you want to begin every day reading just a short, quick devotional to begin your day and to say a prayer, read this with me during the summer months. I read today's already. And here's the very last sentence from today's devotional. God cares so deeply for us that he suffered for us so that we might live in his love forever. And the prayer for today is, thank you for thinking of me, dear God. Let your love flow through me to others. And so here's the conundrum that we are left with if we're truly going to follow Jesus. For in taking communion, as we're about to do in just a few moments here, we are choosing to identify with the sufferings of Christ. Choosing not greatness, but choosing sacrifice. Choosing not position, but choosing humbleness. And so here's the conundrum. The words of Jesus for us to live and how to run this race of faith are very clearly marked for us, black and white, right here in the book. But the question for us, and the question I ask myself, is will our lives truly reflect it? Lord, as we prepare our hearts for Holy Communion, this passage reminds us again that if we're going to follow Jesus, if we want resurrection, there has to be crucifixion. If we want glorification, there's going to be suffering. If we want to be first, we must know what it is to be last. Help us to lay aside everything that puffs us up. Help us to put aside pride, ego, self, ambition, and to pick up our cross and to take up the qualities of Jesus: humility, long-suffering, patience, forgiveness, mercy, grace, love. We deal with this conundrum every day. The disciples dealt with it, and we find ourselves more like the disciples than we do like Jesus. But you're asking us to identify with you.
Hi, I'm John Hanna, pastor of All Things Good, a church that believes in the goodness of God because God is the source of all things good. We are located on the corner of 18th and E Street in Springfield, and our Sunday morning service is 11 o'clock a.m. For more information about our church, you can visit our website at springfieldchurch.org. We look forward to meeting you, and I hope you have a great day.